Welcome to God and Country Biblical Exposition. On this week's program, I'd like to again discuss the 2020 election in view of the new documentary called 2,000 Mules, put out by the conservative activist Inez D'Souza and Catherine Engelbrecht with True the Vote. There have been numerous attempts to prove election cheating in the 2020 election, and this latest investigation by D'Souza and Engelbrecht looked like the strongest case. The bottom line is that Engelbrecht began working with Greg Phillips, an expert in election intelligence, and by purchasing cell phone location data, they were able to identify hundreds of individuals who went to multiple drop boxes in the middle of the night to deposit ballots. This is not something the average voter would do or would need to do, especially in these states where ballot harvesting is illegal. You know, that is picking up ballots for others and depositing them. And who would do that at 3 a.m. in the morning and go from ballot box throughout the night? Also, these carriers were stopping by a handful of specific locations, what the documentary calls stash houses, where apparently they were picking up ballots. This is definitely evidence of fraud that would stand up in a court of law. After the documentary came out, the way the leftist media tried to disprove the legitimacy of this evidence was, you know, absolutely incredulous. Their political bias to defend Democrats was clearly clouding their judgment. Because any reasonable person would at least say, this evidence is compelling. At the very least, it should call for congressional investigations, for FBI investigations, for, you know, state and local law enforcement investigations. But no, the Democrats want to maintain the narrative that there was no cheating in the 2020 election, regardless of the evidence, because it serves their political purposes. But before discussing the documentary, let's stop and ask the question, what is God teaching the church through all this? Obviously, there are no mistakes in life. God raised up Inez D'Souza, Catherine Engelbrecht, and Greg Phillips to do this investigation. They all profess a Christian faith. But are they persecuted heroes of the faith who are standing up for the truth and exposing evil, like the prophets of old? Or are they well-meaning but deluded Christians who are trying to prove something that didn't happen? If you go online, you'll discover there are all sorts of accusations against D'Souza, Engelbrecht, and Phillips. Phillips is accused of owing back taxes, being registered to vote in three states because he had moved, and lying on his resume. D'Souza was convicted of campaign finance violations. Engelbrecht has been accused of voter intimidation. But when you get involved in political activism, it's very easy to even make some little procedural mistakes. But if you threaten the left, they will do opposition research on you and accuse you of everything. They want to make you look bad. They want to discredit your character to undermine what you have to say about their corruption. And these accusations muddy the water. You know, these articles besmirch their character just by making the accusation. You know, certainly there are people on the right who are frauds, who are nutty conspiracy theorists, but the accusations of the left doesn't make it so. PolitiFact quotes Ken Mayer, a University of Wisconsin-Madison political scientist, a favorite go-to guy whenever the left needs someone to support their claims. Mayer says about D'Souza, Engelbrecht, and Phillips, it's conspiracy thinking. They are interpreting data that confirms their pre-existing conclusions. It's a zombie claim. No matter how many times you kill it, it keeps coming back. Well, what's the proof? I mean, you could say that about any conclusion. You know, one could say that about Ken Mayer himself. Those defending the 2020 election as the most secure election in America's history are also interpreting data that confirms their pre-existing conclusions. The left is calling claims of election fraud the big lie, when in fact the big lie might be claims of election integrity. The cheating in the 2020 election may be the biggest cover-up in American history. Do you think political bias plays a part in where you fall on all this? Do you think worldview bias plays a part? Absolutely. Yet worldview bias is not necessarily a bad thing, as long as you have the right worldview. Unless we have an a priori belief that all men are liars, that there's nothing reliable in what the wicked say, Psalm 116 and Psalm 5, will be easily deceived. One must begin with a certain worldview concerning good or evil if you're to discern anything. So not all biases are wrong, but if you have a wrong worldview bias, it will lead to wrong conclusions. When one has a wrong worldview, one sees the lie as the truth. Now, the left is saying that the Christian religious worldview leads to wrong conclusions about the world and policies, and the right is saying that the secular worldview leads to wrong conclusions about the world and policies. Well, in asking what God is teaching us through this 2000 Mule documentary, surely we're reminded that there is a truth war going on in this world. The Gospel of John. You're either of the truth or you're of the lie. You're either in the light or you're in the darkness. And this truth war is a knockdown, drag-out battle. And it's going to culminate in the apocalypse, Christ versus the Antichrist, the people of God versus the people of Satan. But for now, we're in the valley of decision. Joel chapter 3, verse 14. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. Yes, I know the actual context of Joel chapter 3, but the principle is timeless. We have to decide what is truth. Another lesson to be learned in this whole election integrity issue is the orchestrated suppression of evidence. Isn't it telling that social media companies have silenced any opinion or any evidence of election fraud, calling it misinformation? YouTube has recently taken down most of my programs about the 2020 election from last year. I'm at two strikes, and I can't post anything for 2 weeks. And if they find one more video they don't like, I'll be at three strikes, and they're going to take down my entire channel. It's kind of childish, I know. It's kind of like being in elementary school. You know, fortunately, I also post all my videos on Rumble.com, but Rumble doesn't have the same level of viewership. Anyway, YouTube's mail to me reads, content that advances false claims, that widespread fraud, errors, or glitches change the outcome of the U.S. 2020 presidential election is not allowed on YouTube. But what exactly are false claims? I explained in one of my videos the political reason why the legislators didn't want to touch the election fraud issue because they wanted the courts to address it. And then I explained why the courts didn't address it because they wanted the legislators to address it. And so nobody addressed it. And that was my YouTube number 156 entitled, When the System Fails Us. Well, YouTube took that down. So what was so false about my report? Well, as I've been saying for the last few weeks, truth is no longer about objective fact, but about outcomes. If the narrative results in an outcome we like, it's the truth. If the narrative results in an outcome we don't like, it's false. And that's the way truth is being judged in our postmodern relativistic society. And this is the way the lie is being justified as being the truth. The left proves something is false because it looks at the outcomes. But without God's word and God's objective reality as the source of truth, what other standard is there for truth? The Old Testament prophets gave us timeless commentary on this changing definition of truth when a nation is in moral decline. Isaiah chapter 59, great verse, conceiving in and uttering from the heart lying words. Justice is turned back, and righteousness stands far away, for truth has stumbled in the street, and uprightness cannot enter. Yes, truth is lacking, and he who turns aside from evil makes himself a prey. Now the Lord saw, and it was displeasing in his sight that there was no justice. It's obvious to anyone that YouTube is playing pure political partisanship, coming to the aid of the Democrats because the YouTube executives are Democrats. They're supporting their own team. If they were neutral, they would allow for questions of election integrity. And we all know that if Trump won the election and the left claimed election fraud, YouTube would not censor their claims. Just like they never censored Hillary Clinton's claim that the 2016 election was stolen. So on what basis can YouTube call questions of election integrity misinformation? It's not like they have a crystal ball in order to give them discernment between truth and error. They're determining what is true and false based upon their own political bias. And they're following what the Biden administration is instructing them to do: censor claims of election fraud. By the way, Texas just passed a law prohibiting social media companies from prohibiting political viewpoints on their site. That is if the site has more than 50 million monthly viewers, because then they're acting as social media monopolies. This law finds support in the First Amendment and in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. The courts have put a stay on this law, but then recently an appeals court reinstated the law. And this case will make it all the way to the Supreme Court. And it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll be interesting to see who will be the first person in Texas who sues YouTube. Too bad I don't live in Texas. Now, before we get into discussing the documentary, there's just one more point I need to make again. In this truth war, recognize that the battle is not directly over worldview, God versus Satan, Christianity versus secularism, but over the incidentals, the application of one's worldview. Because it's easy to discount this whole issue of social media shutting down opinions about vaccines, about COVID, about elections, and to say, well, that's just politics. The prophet Jeremiah was persecuted for his faith, and that persecution came because of Jeremiah's political views concerning Babylon. So here's a Bible study, Jeremiah chapter 38. Jeremiah was preaching that God's will was for Israel to be conquered by the Babylonians. Jeremiah 38, verse 2. Thus saith the Lord, he who stays in this city will die by the sword and by famine and by pestilence. But he who goes out to the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, will live and have his own life as a booty and stay alive. Thus saith the Lord, this city will certainly be given into the hands of the army of the king of Babylon, and he will capture it. Well, the Israeli government officials didn't like that message. It was contradicting their plans to fight against Babylon. So verse 4, then the officials said to the king, now let this man, Jeremiah, be put to death, inasmuch as he is discouraging the men of war who are left in the city and all the people by speaking such words to them. For this man is not seeking the well-being of this people, but rather their harm. So they took the prophet Jeremiah and they threw him into a deep well to silence him. So do we see what's going on here? Truth wasn't about objectivity, but outcomes. And if the message said something against the outcomes the people in power wanted, they silenced it. But the point is that Jeremiah wasn't persecuted because he believed in God or because he believed that a Messiah was coming, or because he even believed in the Ten Commandments. It was merely the application of God's word that brought about the persecution. Nobody cares if you believe in God, as long as the corrupt people in power are not criticized or exposed. And Jesus was put on the cross mainly because he threatened the power of the Sanhedrin. He was undermining their authority over the people because he was calling the leadership corrupt hypocrites. It was the truth, but for them it was misinformation. It didn't favor the outcomes they wanted. And the Sanhedrin, in their justification, claimed that by silencing Jesus, they were helping to save the people. John chapter 11, verse 48, if we let him, Jesus, go on like this, all men will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. Just like in Jeremiah's case. The government officials said, we have to silence Jeremiah because he's not seeking the well-being of the people, rather their harm. Jeremiah 38, 4 again. Which, of course, is their own bias and subjective opinion concerning what is harmful for the public. The same also in social media companies banning any criticism of the vaccines or the election. It's their bias, it's their subjective opinion that critics are being harmful to the public when in fact the critics may be the very ones who are saving the nation from corruption. So understand that this truth war is fought around the application of God's word, the application of one's worldview. But that's just as much persecution for the truth of God. Now, some might say, oh, Jeremiah, you shouldn't be so political. Just talk about Jehovah God and leave the whole issue of the king of Babylon up to the king of Israel. But that is not the role of the prophet. God calls his people to apply the word of God to the practical issues of the day. And it's in these practical issues where people will be showing either their allegiance or their rebellion to God. The battle for God's truth is being fought in these issues of transgenderism, abortion, socialism, pandemic response, honesty in elections. So my point is this. The documentary, 2,000 Mules, can be a godly endeavor. It's doing the work of God. Unearthing election fraud is Ephesians 5:11 responsibility. Do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but it's instead even expose them. And so we should appreciate this documentary. We should learn from it. You ask, where can I see it? Well, it was in theaters for a few days, but now in order to see it, you need to go to salemnow.com. There you'll see a link to the movie, and you have to create an account and pay $20 to watch it live stream. If you want, you can order the DVD, but with shipping, it comes to $41. You know, I understand people want to watch this stuff for free, but it does take some money to produce it. And besides, the money is going to a good cause. Nobody's getting rich off of this. So the documentary starts off with some Salem media commentators discussing the results of the election. Eric Metaxas, Dennis Prager, Larry Elder, Charles Kirk, Dinesh D'Souza. And the consensus was that there was definitely shenanigans going on in the 2020 election, but that there's no definite proof of the kind of election fraud that would overturn the election. Well, yes, the media favored Biden and deliberately suppressed the story of corruption in Biden's family. And yes, the states violated their constitutions by governors changing election law without the consent of the legislature. And yes, Democrats used COVID to push mail-in ballots, which is prone to fraud. And yes, voting machines can be tampered with. But all these conservative commentators said, we can't prove the case of election fraud enough to demand the overturn of the 2020 election. Now, this consensus surprised me because I believe, even before this documentary, there is enough evidence to justify the conclusion that the election was stolen. And here's why I say that, and others do not. Many people, even conservatives, expect to meet the legal standard beyond a shadow of a doubt or beyond a reasonable doubt. When in reality, when it comes to elections, the case for fraud only has to meet a lesser standard, the preponderance of evidence, because of the nature of elections. Elections are anonymous in America. The voter names are on the envelope, and then the envelopes are separated from the ballot. How are you going to prosecute people for election fraud when elections are anonymous? Cheating on an election is the perfect crime for crooks. There is always plausible deniability. And the sheer number of ballots is unmanageable. Even if you find 1,000 sample illegal ballots, the opposition will say it's still not enough. You have to find and prosecute every single illegal vote for the opposition to admit that the election was stolen. In Georgia and Arizona, it's already been proven that the number of votes with illegal addresses exceeds the vote difference between Trump and Biden. That alone should call for a second election. But that evidence doesn't matter to the Democrats. They know when it comes to elections, wrong addresses are not enough. People expect the proof of malice intent. And that's hard to prove without the FBI interrogating voters. And there's very little public support for that. So evidence of election fraud will never be able to reach the standard of beyond a shadow of a doubt or beyond a reasonable doubt. The only thing we can hope for is the preponderance of evidence. But people, even conservatives, think that if you don't have evidence beyond a shadow of a doubt, then the claim of election fraud can't be made. But no, the claim of election fraud is valid even just with the preponderance of evidence. So I hope you understand the relevance of that point. The other issue that is very disconcerting is that conservatives want to be the nice guy. And so the left will use the virtue of the right against the right. What do I mean? Well, good people are naturally not suspicious. They don't cheat. They therefore assume others don't cheat. And good people never want to accuse someone of fraud without definite proof. And the criminals always use this against the righteous. That's why we have to drag criminals into court and conduct expensive trials, because the criminal will always say you can't prove it and your proof is not valid. So the righteous always have to come up with more proof than is actually necessary. But can we see the danger in good people waiting for too much evidence before they take a stand for something? Because in order to be motivated to look for evidence in the first place, one must start with the hypothesis that there was cheating in the election. Otherwise, why bother to look? And we should be glad for those who are skeptical of the election. But what's really devious is that the leftist media and the Democrats are not simply shutting down false evidence of election fraud. They are shutting down even the questioning of the election. All evidence is being called disinformation. And that's a great ploy, because with that narrative, the public can never get to the truth. The Democrats have created an ad campaign calling the questioning of the election the big lie.
It's clear. For those who challenge the results and question the integrity of the election, no other election has ever been held under such scrutiny and such high standards. The big lie is just that, a big lie.
So rather than Biden emphatically calling any doubting of the election a big lie, an honest man would say, there may have been cheating, and over the next few months, even years, we may get to the bottom of this so we can have confidence in our elections. But instead, he jumps to the conclusion, it's a big lie. because that allows the Democrats to discredit any investigation. And much of the public has bought into this assumption, the claim of election fraud being a big lie, and the leadership of the Republican Party has also acquiesced. Because if the Republicans would have unified and stood up against the Democrats, they would have changed the whole public narrative. And the Democrats wouldn't have owned the narrative. And these social media companies would have been seen for what they are, arms of the Democrat Party. So now we have this new evidence coming out in this documentary, 2000 Mules. And the Republicans, like Mitch McConnell and U.S. Attorney General Bill Barr, all have egg on their face. Because they had been saying that there was no cheating in the election. Bill Barr stated that the U.S. Justice Department has uncovered no evidence of widespread voter fraud that could change the outcome of the 2020 election. But along comes these private citizens, and they find the smoking gun. Did the Justice Department really do an investigation? What Greg Phillips did in tracking the cell phone data of people making multiple visits in the night to ballot boxes is something that the Justice Department should have been doing. They knew, and the FBI knew, that this was possible. But it looks like the deep state had an a priori belief that everything was just fine. Was this naivety? Was this ignorance? Or was this a deliberate attempt to get Trump out of the White House? You decide. But there's no doubt that this was negligence on the part of the FBI and the Justice Department not to do this kind of investigation. Biden won Georgia by only 10,000 votes, and Biden won Arizona by about 14,000 votes. Michigan and Wisconsin were also close. Even with a small ballot harvesting scheme, a ballot printing scheme, that would have changed the outcome of this election. As the 2000 Mule documentary points out, the January 6th Stop the Steal rally wasn't an insurrection against the government. The media would have you think that because they don't want you to know the true reason for the rally. The rally was about people wanting their elected officials to adjudicate the claims of election fraud. And that would take time. Look how long it's taken for this ballot dumping scheme to be uncovered by True the Vote. At the very least, our legislators should have certified the election with caveats, with a special commission set up to investigate claims of election fraud. But for political reasons, legislators pushed through the certification as if you were being un-American if you didn't immediately, unequivocally certify the election. So the documentary uncovers the evidence of fraud. Given the number of ballot carriers the investigation identified, in Atlanta alone, 242, in Georgia, that could have easily added up to 30,000 illegal votes. In Arizona, 20,000. In Wisconsin, 14,000. In Michigan, 125,000. And in Pennsylvania, 275,000. And this would have put Trump in the White House. And this is just with conservative estimates. True the Vote can't take this to court. It's the FBI that has to go and interview each of these cell phone users and the people running these stash houses. But the documentary shows that fraud was very possible and that there's more to be investigated. After these conservative commentators watched the documentary, they were all convinced that this was substantial proof. The cell phone data clearly shows that there was an organized election fraud operation. Now, of course, after the documentary was released, the leftist media tried to disprove the claim. PolitiFact doesn't even deal with the issue, but simply attacks D'Souza personally and claims that these people could have just been delivering ballots for their large family. That argument was actually answered in a documentary, but PolitiFact wrote as if it wasn't even addressed. The Washington Post headline, 2000 Mule offers the least convincing election fraud theory yet. Why? Well, they say because the documentary didn't name actual people and directly identify them with fake ballots. Yet that's not the point being made in the documentary. The point is that there is proof that people were going from box to box in the middle of the night, which is evidence of fraud. The AP press tried to make the claim that cell phone data is not accurate, when in fact, cell phone location data is very accurate. Even in the documentary, True the Vote tried to test out their procedure on a murder case in Atlanta, and they were able to give the police the names of two gang members who were found to be at the shooting location. And the police were able to arrest two suspects. So cell phone data location actually works. And the FBI uses cell phone location data all the time, and it stands up in court. But what I found interesting is that Ben Shapiro, after watching the documentary, was critical of it. He wasn't convinced. Shapiro said, "This does not prove voter fraud, but maybe bad voter procedure. These ballot drops may not have been illegal votes, but they were just illegally picked up." And Shapiro said, "Why can't they show any evidence of fraudulent ballots?" Well, the only thing I can say is that Ben Shapiro is naive. He must live in a studio, never getting out to talk to people on the streets. Because everyone who deals with elections in the cities knows that ballot cheating is institutional. I've listened to firsthand testimony about how the Democrats gather up all the ballots sent to wrong addresses and they fill them out. And this has been going on for years. And there are plenty of operatives who would make it their moral ambition to cheat to help the Democrats win in 2020, namely Antifa. This is why Democrats want mail-in ballots sent to every home, because it gives them thousands of stray ballots to collect and fill in. And if you don't understand this is going on, you just don't understand the level of corruption in our society. These people lie, the media covers for them. They present themselves as clean as the white-driven snow. But to deny that ballot cheating is going on is like saying that there is no drug crimes in the city, or there is no sex trafficking, or that abortions, or that women are not killing their babies in their womb, or children are not watching pornography. Here's a news story. School counselor in Arizona, who organized a drag queen show at her school, has been arrested for having sex with one of the 15-year-old students. The student turned her in. Well, what a shock. Why, people that organize drag shows are just people who want to be open-minded towards sexual orientation. They can't possibly be sexually deviant. How naive can we be? Here's another news story. 15-year-old daughter goes to the bathroom at an NBA game in Dallas. She's kidnapped and sold into sex slavery. And the Dallas police considered the girl a runaway. The father has to enlist the help of a Houston-based sex trafficking prevention organization who understood what is really going on in these disappearances. It's a Pollyannish, head-in-the-sand thinking to say there is no serious election fraud. Our society is so corrupt on so many levels, and it's corrupt in elections. Before the documentary even came out, there was this story. Headlines: Georgia investigators have ballot trafficker who is talking, admits to being paid thousands in the 2020 ballot harvesting scheme. So I checked this story out from multiple sources, and it's real. A man in Georgia came forward and admitted that he was paid $10 for every ballot put into the ballot box. He made $45,000 in 2 months. Not only this man, but many others. So someone was spending millions of dollars to pay these couriers to make sure the Democrats won. The interesting part of the story is that this man's mother told him that what he was doing was wrong and he needed to come forward and confess. And this confirms one of my predictions that if there was cheating in the 2020 election, it had to involve so many people that eventually some would blow the whistle. If I can get Christians to stop being naive, I will have accomplished something. To just get us to realize what the Bible has to say about the corruption that's in the human heart. Don't believe the cover-up. Romans chapter 3, verse 10. As it's written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none who understands. There is none who seek for God. All have turned aside. Together they have become useless. There is none who does good. There is not even one. Their throat is an open grave. With their tongues they keep deceiving. The poison of asps is under their lips, whose mouth is full of cursing and bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery are in their path. The path of peace they have not known. There is no fear of God before their eyes. Do you believe what God has to say about the human condition? Or do you believe the lie of secularism, that man is basically good and can be trusted? That's actually the big lie. Salvation comes when we recognize that we are rotten to the core, and our only hope is the transformation of the soul through the power of the Holy Spirit by faith in Jesus Christ. Joel chapter 3, verse 14, multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. There's much more that needs to be said, but with that, I'll close. Thank you for listening. Like, share, leave a comment below, and subscribe. I'm banned from YouTube for a while, so to subscribe, you need to subscribe on rumble.com, which will help to boost the few subscriptions I have on Rumble. Thank you for listening. May Jesus Christ reign.